Welcome to Luxury Leaders, your podcast for all things in the luxury hospitality space. I'm your host, Brandon Stone. Today's guest, Simon Kasson, the brand new CEO of Corinthia Hotels. How are you doing, Kasson?
Hey, Brandon. I'm doing great. Thank you. Good to see you and delighted to be chatting luxury and hospitality.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you on, and I'm super excited about our conversation today. Tell me how things are going so far. You just started 2 weeks ago with Corinthia. How's it going?
Yeah, it's a bit of a whirlwind, you know, drinking from a fire hose. Firstly, you know, sort of transitioning back to living in home country here in London after more than 20 years living all around the world. So a lot of change and positive change on the personal life front. And of course, you know, very exciting to be taking on the reins of a great company at this important time in its evolution.
So tell me, how did you even, you know, decide to leave the Four Seasons to begin with Corinthia? Tell me about that process and journey.
Listen, I mean, firstly, Four Seasons, what an amazing company, a company that, you know, gave me a canvas upon, you know, which to paint my career and define my life. Not that the company defined my life, but really the ethos and the culture of Four Seasons was life defining. Loved it and still love it. Great company. But, you know, time for everything and everything in its time, really a combination of factors. And on the personal front, you know, having lived away from home for a long time, as we get older, we're drawn back to, you know, to our roots. You know, my children, three adult children are all here in the UK, actually family home, and my wife are based on a beautiful little farm in Croatia. So I wanted to get closer to there, back to the UK. My parents, you know, I'm still blessed to have my parents alive, so a little close to them as well. So on the personal front, those were the draws. And then, you know, after 34 years with Four Seasons, really, I thought if you're going to get out of your comfort zone and do something different, you know, I'm 56 years old. So I thought, you know, now's probably, you know, the sort of moment to be doing that. And, you know, I sort of harbored the desire to run a whole company. I had a great job with Four Seasons. You know, I was running 45 hotels across 26 countries, I think 16,000 people. But I was running a geographic region of a company for operations. So the chance to be a CEO and run a whole of a smaller company was pretty compelling to me.
Very interesting. And how did you, you know, get hired for that, recruited for that?
Well, you know, when I stopped Four Seasons, I thought I would take some time off. You know, I was planning to take several months off and didn't put my name out there, didn't connect with anyone, was not sure if I was going to do another job. You know, I was thinking maybe just to get on the tractor and live a bit more of a rural life. But then when the news became public, started getting approached by several companies. I think I spoke to 8 companies who approached me, some directly, some through executive search firms. You know, spoke to them all. And, you know, I'd set pretty clear criteria for myself if I was going to jump back into a big corporate role, you know, certain priorities and things that I knew would work for me. And as I sort of whittled it down, Corinthia, you know, fit into those, their history, their ambition, their preparedness to have me, you know, base the corporate office from, you know, from London. And very much, you know, the people from the chairman, Alfred Pisani, just a guy of great humanity, a really interesting story. You know, and I lived and worked in the golden era of Four Seasons, you know, as it was led by Izzy Sharp. And so to be part of another founder-led company, and importantly to help transition it from founder-led to founder-inspired was interesting to me. And, you know, I liked what they stood for. I liked the ambition that they had and the growth pipeline of hotels that we had sort of coming down the pipe was pretty compelling as well.
Tell me about their story. I know they started as a restaurant.
Well, you know, Alfred Pisani, 1962, you know, his father had bought a very grand villa for the family to live in Malta. And after, within 3 months of buying it, his father, you know, sadly passed away unexpectedly. And so Alfred and his mother and brothers were left with this very big house and no means to support the family. So they decided to turn it into a restaurant. And what is Corinthia Palace Hotel today was that original site. And then the company grew really through hard work, grit, entrepreneurial drive from the chairman, in terms of, large scale outside catering across Malta, North Africa, catering restaurants, eventually got into hotels, different levels of the market, but also shopping malls and lands and a bakery and laundry and a Costa Coffee franchise, along the way, a pretty diverse business. But they came to the point to recognize that they had very much untapped potential and opportunity within Carinthia to make it into a pure play luxury brand. And the mandate from the board to me was to elevate service experience, guest experience, as well as employee experience in a pure play luxury way, as well as grow the company. We're real estate owners. We own some of the hotels we operate in. We also manage, but really looking through hotel management agreements to grow the company from here in a luxury focused way.
How would you define luxury?
For me, it's experiential, Brandon. What's a good hotel and what's a great hotel? There's a lot of good hotels out there. I was living in Dubai. It was probably 700 five-star hotels in Dubai. But are they all world-class luxury in the guest point of view? No. But what makes a good hotel? And you've probably heard me say this before, is the physical, right? It's the building with architectural merit, who's the interior designer, the marble, the lighting, the acoustics, the flowers, the furniture, all the soft touches, the spa, the restaurants. But those are all things that can be bought. And so, anyone with a lot of money could get the right piece of land, the right architect, the right ID, and create a good hotel. But that quantum leap from good to great is human. It's experiential. It's delivered by people. And so luxury for me is, how do we make you feel? How do we recognize you? How do we intuitively get you right in an authentic, unscripted manner?
So it's really, getting to know your guests and what they need and delivering on that.
Yeah. I mean, elevating on that base. I mean, there's a lot of operating procedures and standards and physical touch points. There's 1,000 small things that are the price of entry into luxury. So you've got to get all those basics right. And then you've got to, sort of elevate on that with the humanity, with the service. And you best serve when, you have employees that are inspired to do so, when they feel great about themselves and their job and feel that they can be themselves and how they interact with the customers.
You've mentioned in previous interviews, you have to really know yourself. How was that journey for you, and how do you help others look into themselves to know themselves, to be able to, flourish?
Listen, I think the greatest journey any of us are on is the journey into self. And it's a lifelong pursuit, and it's a journey of never-ending discovery. But it starts in our childhoods, and it's all a function of where are we born, who are we born to, what are the social economic circumstances that we're born into? Because along that whole journey of life, there are many affecting factors that kind of pull us back, many of them out of our control. But it's like you're going through life with this sort of metaphorical rucksack. And stones again dropped into, where you were born, who you were born to, were your parents together or separated? How were your sibling relationships? How were your early school years? Did you have teachers that inspired you and helped you find a passion and a purpose for your life? Or was it, a less inspiring school experience? How were early friendships? Very important. How you think about yourself when you're 8, 9, 10, how the kids in the playground interact with you has a massive impact. Early romantic relationships, early work relationships. How were your bosses? Were they inspiring you to greatness and modeling servant leadership? And so all of those things are going to be present. The reality is that they all hold us back because they have elements of regret, of disappointment, of pain and fear and anxiety and, things that kind of draw you down. And the journey into self is recognizing that that's a part of everyone's life journey. You got to take that rucksack off, take those stones out and say, hey, thank you for the pain. Thank you for the experience, because they were so formative to me growing. We don't grow in a comfort zone. We grow when we're skating on the cusp and when we're sort of, falling and facing adversity. Those are the most fertile moments of growth in life. So, I would say, look for those. And, you know, then recognize that we inherently have this amazing ability to heal, to outgrow circumstances, to, you know, do things that are miraculous that at one point we thought we could never do. But it starts with this sort of natural sense of self, the belief in your ability to grow and to be successful.
I think that's the true definition of confidence.
Yeah, and it's a learned thing. You know, I don't think anyone's born with this stuff, Brandon. You know, it's something you acquire over time as you practice it, and you acquire it as much through failing as you do from succeeding. You know, my starting point in this business was, you know, right at the bottom of the ladder. You know, this wasn't the life I was supposed to live.
What was the life you were, quote unquote, supposed to live, and how did that change into
Listen,
this?
You know, I had a few inflection points along the way. I mean, when I was 13 years old, I was washing dishes in a local restaurant, late 70s, busy, loud kitchen, lots of stuff going on. And through these doors going where the waiters and waitresses came in and out, I got this view onto another world on the other side. People pulling up in nice cars, dressed nicely, celebrating special moments. And something caught that young boy, said, hey, here's an industry that appeals to me. That sort of, you know, the amazing beauty and elegance and joy at the front of house with the sort of intense power of the, what went in to produce it. So I had an early glimpse of, hey, this is something I could do. You know, what I was supposed to be, you know, at 15, I was called in by the school careers master and told, Kasson, you're a failure. You're not going to pass any exams. We do not see a bright future for you. You know, learn how to fix our cars, join the army or something like that. And that was the end of my schooling. And I remember going home and waiting for my mum to come home from work. She worked in a hospital that had an evening job in a pub to make ends meet, because she was a single parent raising us at that time. And I remember, you know, waiting for her and telling her, hey, mom, I had the big talk. She said, what did they say? I said, mommy, they told me I'm a failure. I'm not going to amount to much in life. And, you know, she put her hands around me and said, Simon, you're special. You're going to be a leader of men. You're going to live an incredible life. You're going to become wealthy. You're going to live all over the world. And you know, she gave me that belief in self. I mean, she doesn't know that. But she has only a mother's love. But in that one moment when the whole world was saying, no, you can't, we all need someone who's in our corner that says, hey, I believe in you. You know, yes, you can. And so that's when it started. You know, I left home and, you know, from an early age, started working all the basic jobs, commis chef, luggage porter, room attendant, cocktail barman, started honing my craft and really started then my lifelong learning journey. I mean, it wasn't in the four walls of a school building, but I'm a voracious reader. I'm an observer of people. I have a thirst for learning and self-growth. You know, I think I read 70 odd books last year, and I only read biographies and business books, but I'm always, you know, learning. And so that, you know, she sort of instilled the seed of confidence, and I took that and ran with it.
That's very true. We sometimes need that outside voice of someone who believes in us to give us that push to kind of to fly. You mentioned you're an avid reader. What are some of your favorite books that made the most impact in your life?
You know, I constantly have two or three on the go. You know, Richard Branson just brought out I do a lot on Audible. He just brought out an Audible amalgamation of his two books. I think one's called Losing My Virginity, one's called Finding My Virginity. And just listening to his story, incredibly, you know, and inspiring. You know, I just had my first executive leadership team meeting last week, and in front of each of them, I placed a copy of Simon Sinek's book, Leaders Eat Last. You know, this concept, it's a military concept that the people who are fighting the good fight, they get to sit down and eat first. And as I was explaining and sort of advocating to my new leadership team, the model that we'll be pursuing of servant leadership, you know, that helped speak to it that, you know, we're here as leaders to support the teams in the field. This is not an easy business, hotels and hospitality. And those experiences that people are often paying £1,000 a night for are not delivered by the CEO, the chief commercial officer, or the chief financial officer. They're delivered by the valet parker, by the doorman, by the room attendant, by the waiter, all these people at the sharp end of service. And so our job is to create and nurture an environment where they can be the best they can be, where they have the tools to do their job, where they feel inspired and supported, and they feel that they can be authentically themselves and therefore express that in the service they give to the customers.
How do you help promote that environment?
Firstly, you've got to model it from the top. And, you know, if you read Izzy Sharp's book in this formative years of Four Seasons, when he chose to really recalibrate and bet the bank on the company around the golden rule that we're going to live by treating others as they wish to be treated. And you'll read in his book that he had some of his senior executive team paid lip service to that and were amazingly talented executives, but were exhibiting behaviors that were not consistent with the golden rule. He got rid of them. And Izzy wasn't a hotelier. He needed those guys. But he knew that if I didn't in that moment double down on what I've told the whole company is going to be our main focus and our sort of raison d'etre and our ethos, if I don't hold the people at the top to it, it's not going to stick. So firstly, model it from the top and then make sure that that's replicated in your leadership in the field. You know, be judicious in the general managers you hire. Of course, you need subject matter experts, but you also need people who are kind. And that's a tough contradiction, because we're in the pursuit of perfection, not easily achieved. And that doesn't, you've got to be driven. You've got to be results focused. You've got to be unreasonable in your expectations. But you can be robust and driven and still be kind, because you have your arm around people and you're calling them to a higher place. And it's like an elite sports team, and everyone wants to be part of that. And it's challenging, and you've got to be your best, and you've got to train. But when you're part of it, it just feels really great. So it's all about sort of creating and nurturing that type of environment.
Sounds to me like it's the difference between saying, hey, you go do this, versus, like you said, put your arm around them. We're coming to this place together, on a journey together.
Well, it's, you know, the old sort of saying, you know, that sort of vast chasm between a manager and a leader. You know, management is a job title you can be given. You know, anyone can say, okay, I'm now giving you this business card and you're the room service manager. And then you go, and then the people in room service have to do what you say, because you've been given the title of room service manager. But leadership's not a job title that can be given. You know, leadership is a reputation you have to earn and re-earn day in, day out, with how you show up, with how you make people feel, with how you model leadership, with how you listen, with how you empathize, as well as with how you drive and push and deliver, you know, amazing outcomes.
I assume you must have had a great mentor or two in your life who helped, you know, bring you up. Can you comment on that?
Listen, I think we're first and foremost a product of what we choose to do with ourselves. And at the end of the day, we come alone and we leave alone. And it's really our responsibility. But without doubt, those that attain high office and great success are almost without exception there because someone cared enough to mentor them. And mentoring sounds this really kind concept. But, you know, I've had mentors that, you know, told me to shave off a mustache because it looked stupid on me, told me what type of shirts to wear, you know, told me things that were uncomfortable. Mentors invest in you and give you those, hold that mirror up to you in a way that causes you to change. But they do it in a way that I'm telling you this because I believe in you, because you're special. You have talent. If you want to maximize it, you got to refine here, polish this facet of your diamond here. So many along the way, you know, early ones in Four Seasons, you know, in the UK hotel industry, Ramon Pajares, who was running Four Seasons London in the late 80s, Robert Chima, who's still with Four Seasons today and, you know, runs our hotels in California, you know, was an amazingly inspirational presence in my life. When I first went to the States, Stan Bromley, who was, you know, a legend in his own lifetime as a hotelier in the U.S., you know, was just driven. I mean, he drove me to the nth degree. He pushed me, and I felt like I was failing a lot of time. And he was unrelenting in his obsession for details and his obsession that leaders serve their staff. But I grew through there. Back to the UK, you know, John Stouse, who was then running the London Hotel. Chris Norton, who was, you know, a predecessor of mine as president of Four Seasons, in terms of an urbane, stylish role model who was really focused on the aesthetic and the small details and walked and talked luxury, you know, amazing. Christian Clerc, who followed him as president, and I followed Christian, you know, was a driven business leader, was sold out hospitality, you know, fiercely supported his, you know, his teams. Antoine Corinthians, you know, along the way, who was a previous president. And of course, Izzy Sharp, you know, the man, the myth, the legend, was someone who was ultimately, you know, a lifelong inspiration for me.
What do you think is the difference between, you know, someone who takes these leadership qualities and is kind of average with them versus someone who, you know, multiplies them by 10?
I think it's about what you focus on, because, you know, firstly, I think everyone wants to be successful, right? Everyone would like to be at the top, not everyone, but vast majority, you know, want more purpose, more title, more financial security to their families. Everyone wants to be great, but why is everyone not great? Why everyone wants to get to the top? Why do few people? Why does the funnel narrow? And I think there's no one answer to that, but, you know, that sense of self and preparedness to develop yourself, which is a tough journey to put yourself through. I think also the recognition that, you know, in the hospitality business, you know, we have to really become subject matter experts in a skill set. And what I learned early is that, you know, if I was room service manager, I had to be the best room service manager. And that involved learning all of these things and become great. It's pretty learnable. The same as a front office manager. The problem is you change from room service to front office and the functional skill set has changed. But what I recognized early is that this second wheel, this generic skill set, which is about leadership, your ability to inspire, to communicate a message, to set a strategic vision and execute it, these skills accompany you through every stage of a journey and still accompany me today as I'm into this new role. So work on those. And the problem is we're in a really intense business where you've every day, 10, 12, 14 hours a day, you're focusing on this wheel. Do, deliver, check in, check out, serve meals. You don't really have time to be growing as a leader. So you've got to recognize that every month that goes by, what did I do to spin this wheel? This wheel, the guests will spin, my bosses will spin. This wheel, it's self-propelled. Only if I read, if I observe, if I sort of educate and grow myself and practice the art of leadership, because the functional skills are a science. The generic leadership skills are an art.
Speaking of art, I watched one of your other interviews where you're, you know, you love music, which is art. You play the piano, you play the guitar. How does that influence your professional life?
Okay, I've got to like truth in advertising here. I'm really basic and poor at piano, and I'm really basic and poor on guitar. But I'm a pretty good singer. So I always have a song in my head. I've sung in bands over the years, and, you know, I still sing now. You know, to music is it's part of every day of my life. I always have a song in my head. It's a respite. It's a happy place for me. And there's learning, because, you know, some of the great lyricists and songwriters, those songs are not crafted often from a happy, pleasant place. They're crafted from a place of difficulty, of heartbreak, of disappointment, of unrequited love, or whatever it is. And so, you know, I find music in all its forms and genres, you know, really inspiring. And, you know, I've been able to pass that on to my kids. You know, quicker aside, I was in Dubai after pandemic, that I'm not going to have a car anymore. I bought a little electric scooter. So I'm going to scooter to work. You know, it was like 15 minutes. And rather than being in the car and doing emails and things with the driver, I jumped on the scooter, gave me clear headspace, but I started daddy scooter songs. So every day I would have one hand on the scooter, the other recording myself singing a different song. It could be Van Morrison, Beatles, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, whatever it is. And we go into this routine that connected us and shared my love of music with the kids.
That's awesome. I can relate. I always have a song in my head as well. And it's like a radio station that just can't seem.
I'm suspicious of anyone that doesn't love music. For me, it's life without music would be incredibly dull and, you know, much poorer.
Agreed. Yeah. Let's go back to your core values, and, you know, what are you bringing to the Corinthia Hotel Group? What did you bring over from the Four Seasons? What are you bringing over from your past experiences? And then, you know, what do you want to change at Corinthia, and what's your vision for that?
What I'm bringing is me. And of course, what formed me was a huge amount of Four Seasons, but also my family and my friends, my life experiences. So I'm bringing me in. At this point, I've sort of lived the life that I have and believe what I believe. And a lot of that I've seen and observed with through me and other leaders, what works really well and what doesn't work. So I'm bringing that to bear. But, firstly, I'm observing. Before I started the job, the month before, I said, before I step into the corporate office, I'm going to go visit every hotel. So I did a little tour around the Corinthia hotels. I want to be on the ground, meet the people, see the hotels and the product, be in our sort of group corporate offices in Malta, meet the boards of directors, all of that, and really send the signal that before I step into a corporate office and that job, what's more important is the field. And I wanted to be clear to send that message. So that was early on. And then, early work is around observing, is around listening. Because listen, this company's been going 60 years. It was successful without me. Of course, they're bringing me with a mandate to elevate and grow pure play luxury hotel business. But it's a very successful company with many capable people. So, assessing the state of the current portfolio, the state of the people and the talent, the state of the process in place takes a lot of, observation, asking people. I wrote to every member of the company, every employee, and said, hey, fill out this anonymous link and tell me the three things that you love, appreciate, enjoy, and, inspire you about Corinthia. And then send me the three things that suck, that frustrate you, that stop you being the best version of you, that stop you providing the service to our guests. And so that's flowing at the moment. I've had several hundred people writing in. Anonymous, because it really doesn't matter. You'll have one supremely happy person, one person who thinks it's the worst company in the world. Not important, those outliers. For me, it's patterns, trends, what bubbles up. Because as I work to set a strategic plan for the future of this company, of course I want that to be informed by the people who are in the company to get their buy-in, to have credibility. And when I, share with the board and then with the company, hey, here's the strategic plan, I want to be able to tell the vast majority and the employees, say, this was informed by your voice. So thank you for speaking up. Your voice counts. So that's the early work. Authenticity in leadership and humility in leadership. Firstly, I'm Simon. I'm not Mr. Castle. I'm not coming in here to lord over anyone. And, I'm a great believer in a flat hierarchy. We all know who does what job. We don't need to wear that as a banner or overly rely on formality to give ourselves importance. So, I did like a poster which I sent to each hotel, which told them about me, told them about music, had pictures of my family, what I do, what my hobbies are, a little bit what my journey was. And it was kind of get to know Simon. So revealing the waterline. And I've built on that as I visited the hotels. And then making sure that the tone from the top is right. I have an executive leadership team. There's some long-serving members in there who've been doing an amazing job. I have some newly arriving, just arrived chief development officer, soon to arrive chief financial officer, and spending time with them and then working on us as a team, that we're firstly aligned in our values and the way that we want to do business, which of course is going to be heavily guided by how I want to lead this company. So I have to communicate that. And then making sure that they have a voice, that in our ELT meetings, that they can be loud and rambunctious. And I want to hear opinions expressed. I want people to challenge me and disagree with me. But when we walk in that room, I want us to be figuratively seen as holding hands, because every family, every company wants to look at, say, hey, mom and dad are united. Because otherwise they go to one for this or one for that, try and play the system. So a lot of early work on team at the senior level. Beyond that, we have four hotels open in the next 12 months. So mission critical to get those right.
You got New York, Rome,
Brussels, and Bucharest. So New York is on the Upper East Side, the famous and iconic Surrey Hotel, just next to the Carlisle there. And that's a fabulous, and Corinthia have really gained a reputation for their ability to transform historic buildings. So in Rome and New York, we're partnering with the Rubin family, who are a prolific property development family here in the UK. So they own those two buildings, and we have the privilege of managing for them. So we're racing to the finish line on those two. In Bucharest, we're partnering with the Dumitru family to take over really the most iconic hotel in Bucharest that's been closed for an age, but it's one of those grand old hotels, and sympathetically reimagining that to be a beautiful luxury hotel of today. And then in Brussels, we actually bought the building. We're the owners of the hotel as developers as well as operators, and that's, on the main street in Rome again, a historic building that we're bringing back to its former glory. So, there's a clear reality for a small company like ours to be opening four hotels in a 12-month period is a huge draw on talent and resources. So everyone's focused on that, and that's mission critical. And then along the way, we'll start working all the other subsidiary parts. So as we get into 2025 and those four hotels have all opened, then we can start deploying the plan that I will work on for how we elevate and grow all other aspects of the company.
Well, I can tell you have one of the best director of engineering for the Surrey in New York, my good friend Lakshan, who you met in person not too long
Yeah.
ago.
He sends me videos every day from the site with his phone, pointing his finger, saying, "Okay, look at this. Here's an update here." So yeah, the guy's on it. Bravo, Lakshan.
Yeah, that's great. And for these other openings, how do what's your recruiting strategy?
Well, we're a small company. I mean, every company would love to develop and promote from within, but when you have a fairly small base, it's incumbent on you to go outside and look for talents. And so there's a mixture. We have, in Bucharest, we have homegrown talent. Jean is running the hotel there. In the other hotels, we went in for who's best in the market. So Edward in Brussels, is from there, understands the market, has worked in that market before as a hotelier of note. Pradeep in New York, I think, is a bit of an institution. Pradeep Raman in the New York hotel market. Tremendous charisma and style, and will be leading that hotel. And then Danilo Zucchetti, who's run grand dams like the Villa d'Este on Lake Como before, is our GM in Rome. And again, to have an Italian in Rome, and I mean, Rome, we have a site that, I was looking at sites for 20 years or with Four Seasons and the development team there. The site we have in Rome is A plus and is going to allow us to take a strong leadership in that market for sure. And so those three of those towns from outside, so that's why I went and spent time with each of those guys to start talking to them and their teams, so they're hearing from me about my philosophy and leadership. Listen, they bring all their talent to the table, and so they're a diamond, but I'm here with a polishing cloth. I'm going to be polishing certain facets of those diamonds to make sure it has the spirit of Corinthia and the ethos and the vision that I have for the future of this company.
I can tell you're very passionate about that and excited about the upcoming growth of the company and putting your thumbprint on things.
As a hotelist, the greatest thing you do is you bring a new hotel to market or reimagine an existing hotel. I say to the teams when I visit, imagine a hotel like the Summer. It has in Surrey, it has this storied history. But in the next 100 years, imagine the love affairs that will start there, the business deals that are executed there, the marriages that happen, the bar mitzvahs, the celebrations. And imagine the thousands of people over the next 100 years that will work and have a career in that hotel. But there's only one group of people, one team that will say, "I was there at the beginning. I was a founding father, mother of this hotel." And people will, 20 years from now, walk their kids past and say, "Hey, I was there when that hotel opened." And that's special. I mean, how can you not be passionate and excited about that?
I can really sense the love of people that you have and you have to be in this business.
It's for me the alpha and the omega, because we're a people business. And I think, I have a genuine love of people, a genuine interest in people. At this time in my career, my greatest joy comes from seeing around the world, the many people who I've worked with and have been able to have a small impact on them, their lives, their careers, to help them along the way, and seeing people rise up into senior leadership positions around the world is just incredibly, edifying. And, ultimately, that's the legacy, right? No one's going to look back and remember me for the P&L that I delivered in Doha in 2005 or the restaurant that I opened in Dubai in 2013. People don't remember that. People remember how you made them feel. And so be investing part of your every day in kindness, in inspirational leadership, and helping people to be the best that they can be. Therein lies the kind of legacy I'm interested in.
How do you balance that with the use of technology, which is completely, one could say technology is the complete absence of people.
Yeah. Well, I look at technology as an enabler. I mean, technology underpins the delivery of service. Technology allows, speed and automation and cost efficiencies, but it has to be an enabler. It can't be what's in front of the guest. The guest experience should have been helped by it, but it should not be the final interface that the guest sees. The end product of it should always be, human. So, I have a story from, of course, my stories are Four Seasons stories because that's where I spent most of my life. But, we created a great chat function in that company. But there was real people answering the chat. And we enabled them with technology, had the answer, set phrases. But then we allowed them to express themselves individually. So, I woke up one time at 3 a.m. and I can't remember where it was, honestly. I think it was maybe Milan or somewhere. And realized I had a car booked for 8, but I didn't need the car till 9. You don't want to speak to him at that time of night. So I just went on the app and said, hey, can you change my car to 9 from 8? They came back within 15 seconds. Certainly car changed. So that's technology. It allows me to communicate in a way that works for me. And I get an answer back and I go back to sleep. Then a message comes back. Hey, Simon, it's 3 a.m. and you're awake. You want us to send up some chamomile tea or anything you need? That's where you take the technology and boom, then you take it. That's where the magic happens, because there's a bot is not going to answer like that. That's a real person answering the chat saying it's 3 a.m. He's woken up and thought of something. Let's help him get back to sleep. That's where you win guests for life.
So technology is an enabler to,
to service, to outcomes, to experiences. Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's go back to storytelling. Experiences are powerful. Stories are powerful. What's been one of your favorite success stories?
Oh, man. There's been as much failure as there has success, you learn much from both. But I think, opening hotels as a general, firstly, I'm a hotelier. I've ended up being a corporate officer, but at my heart, and another reason for coming back to Corinthia was to get closer to the field, a smaller company where I can be involved and connect with every hotel. When I went to Doha, Qatar in 2003 as the pre-opening general manager, I couldn't believe that, Izzy and the company were letting me run this $100 to $300 million business. And Izzy said, it's yours. You're the CEO of this business. And, you just do everything that you've learned. You know how to. I was 33 years old. I was the youngest general manager in Four Seasons. And the journey I had there from recruiting every single member of staff, 600 staff. And I did the final interview with every single one of them myself. And not in Doha. I went to Bangladesh. I went to Nepal. I went to the Philippines. I went to India. I went to Ukraine. I went all over and we're meeting staff in their countries. And of course, they went through a filtering process with, HR. So by the time they got to me, I'm not interested in their job skills or abilities. I'm looking, do you have the sparkle in your eye to be part of something that's going to be special that I'm giving my blood, sweat, and tears to? Do you want to be part of that? And catch them. Because, when that guy in Kathmandu goes home to his, Nepalese family and says, hey, I'm going to go to Doha for a job. Oh my God, no, it's the Middle East. It's a long way away. And he should. He's like, I met the GM and he seems like a good person. And he's promised me. And when that guy arrives in Doha, there's a little welcoming party at the airport, welcome to Doha. When he gets to the staff accommodation, there's a room there with a handwritten note for me and a little fruit bowl and a Four Seasons mug saying, hey, we're expecting you. When he gets into work, we took his measurements when we were in Kathmandu. So he has a uniform that fits him. He has a training plan laid out. We're expecting you. You know, if you take away all the barriers that stop someone to be great, because everyone wants to be amazing. No one wants to be rubbish at their job. He's come a long way. What will stop him being great is if you turn up, there's no one at the airport. Where do I go? Or you turn up in your department and you feel silly because you're in your own clothes, or there's no training plan and the boss, or I didn't know you were arriving, or, you know, the department manager doesn't listen or doesn't, you know, give you an opportunity to express your views and your voice, or you get no training. Those things push you down. They stop you being great. Listen, you will still do your job, but you'll do it in this very safe place. The problem is excellence doesn't reside there. Excellence is skating out there on the cusp where you're free to be you and me, and you can make mistakes and know that someone's going to reach out and give you a helping hand up. So my greatest experiences have been opening hotels, but not because of the physical hotel, because of the lives that I saw as change and the experiences I saw as create for customers was mind-blowing and life, memorable, life-changing for me.
So you obviously had to be good at painting a picture, putting a vision in someone's head, and then delivering on that vision.
Got to be storytellers. We're in a business of storytelling. And that's how the great families do it. You know, you sit at grandpa's knee and listen to those stories, and that's how you feel connected to your family. No different in a business. We got to tell stories. And Corinthia has, you know, a great history of that. You know, our chairman, Alfred Pisani, just, you know, wrote his book and life story about how he started from nothing, how with his bare hands, literally in the early days, mixing the concrete himself, you know, created this company into what it is today. And he very touchingly, when he sent me his book, he wrote in the front cover and said, Simon, this is 60 years of my life work. You know, I now look to you to grow Corinthia to be a global luxury brand. You know, the future of my legacy is in your hands. And for me, that was a goosebumps moment and a realization that this is a human company that cares greatly. And, you know, I've got to give it my all to continue that legacy.
This is his Mona Lisa that he's giving you the paintbrush to finish.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, hey, don't mess this up. Huh? I mean, he's 85 years old, but is incredibly robust, mentally alert, physically strong. And, you know, he's going to be watching me closely, no doubt. Mr. Chairman, if you see this video, know that I got it. I'm going to make you proud.
I'll make sure to find him and send this video to him. yes, he talked about sitting on grandpa's knee, story time. I have a great story about my grandpa that he used to have a finger that was smashed. And for the longest time, he would tell us kids that he was picking his nose and a booger got it. And it was years until I found out the truth about that finger was he was in World War II and his hand was down on a rail or something and someone smashed it with a butt of a rifle.
Yeah.
But for the longest time, us kids believed that a booger got it. So he wouldn't pick our nose, so that wouldn't happen to our finger.
The power of storytelling.
Yes, yes. Any other adding topics you'd like to share, Simon, before
You know, I guess, you know, just in closing, you know, what's important to me as well is that as an industry of hospitality, that we're relevant to the next generation of people coming through. You know, not unlike many in other industries, you know, it tends to be a very male-dominated industry, tends to be dominated general managers around the world, you know, from Europe are the most highly prized. You know, I want to be part of making a change in that. I want to see more diverse leadership in our hotels, leading companies. And we have to recalibrate in how we are as employers, how we work, flexibility in working, accelerated career paths for those that deserve it. You know, talent is not created equal. So if someone's extraordinarily talented, they should move more quickly, get promoted more quickly versus be in the, you know, in the system. So we're a business that, you know, our human capital is mission critical to success. So, you know, important to me, you know, in the years ahead of making sure that Corinthia is a company that's progressive, that's welcoming, that's a culture and ethos based on a strong spirit of Corinthia.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Simon. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and learning about you and seeing your vision for where Corinthia is going. And I think a lot of people will get a lot of value out of this. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Brandon. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being a promoter of storytelling and helping, I and others get our story out, and many more to come, I'm sure. So a pleasure to chat with you today.
Thank you. See ya.